Today's show is sponsored by DivvyCloud. DivvyCloud protects cloud and container environments from misconfigurations, policy violations, threats, and IAM challenges. With automated real-time remediation, DivvyCloud helps customers like Spotify, Twilio, and Discovery achieve continuous security and compliance so they can realize the full benefits of cloud and container technology. DivvyCloud provides continuous security and compliance across all cloud providers and containers, including AWS, GCP, Azure, Alibaba, and Kubernetes, providing a comprehensive view of what's in your cloud, along with the tools and automation you need to manage it today, tomorrow, and well into the future as your business needs grow and change. Through its new Infrastructure as Code security capability, DivvyCloud also addresses problems before runtime and prevents the introduction of security and compliance risks into your cloud infrastructure. DivvyCloud assesses potential code changes with the context of your unique cloud footprint and offers meaningful feedback on how the changes would affect your security and compliance posture. To learn more, visit divvycloud.com/cloudcast. That's divvycloud.com/cloudcast to sign up for a free trial. DivvyCloud. Find your freedom to innovate.
Cloudcast Media presents from the massive studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome back to The Cloudcast. We're coming to you live from the massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hope everyone is doing well this week and staying safe. It's a bit of a quiet week. We're kind of heading into this period that normally would have been reserved for spring conference season, right? A number of conferences are all pushed or turning virtual or moving to the fall. But at the same time, a lot of the product announcements are starting to kind of come out. And that's what we have in the news this week. A couple of interesting announcements that normally may have come out as part of some larger shows. And then probably as we move to virtual shows, we probably have a lot more announcements coming out in the upcoming weeks as well. And so with that, two articles today, and we'll move on to the first one. The first one is the Cloud Foundry and becoming more Kubernetes native, if you will. There is a project out there, a new project, Cloud Foundry for Kubernetes. And the idea being is how can they take the Cloud Foundry distribution and refactor it, reimagine it into something that is Kubernetes native? And in addition to the base, how do you take some of the other projects and remaster them into components that are now Kubernetes native? So, you know, the release bundles popular projects like KPAC or Istio or Fluentd into them as well. So if you're interested in that, the link is in the show notes. And moving on to the second article, does everyone remember Google Cloud and Anthos? Well, it is now generally available on AWS as well as GCP. Again, I've been super interested in this space and following this. I think it's a pretty interesting concept and a pretty interesting product. Taking this platform and really making it run in multiple clouds, and you know, to hear them talk about it, it's really this idea of taking everything behind the scenes and making it API neutral, if you will. No API lock-ins, have everything work universally everywhere. So you're kind of a universal app and control plane across clouds. Now, they did mention Azure isn't there yet. Azure will be coming sometime later in the fall. But AWS is now generally available, and that's a pretty big deal. And we'll see where it goes from here. Like I said, I'm still interested in the use cases here and the uptake on that. And so with that, that's the news for this week. Again, quick news segment this week. And now on to the show.
Today's show is brought to you by MongoDB. When you need to focus on building applications, do you want to get bogged down by your database? Definitely not. MongoDB is an intuitive, flexible document database that lets you get to building. MongoDB's document model is a natural way to represent data so you can focus on what matters. And MongoDB Atlas is the best way to use MongoDB. It's a global cloud database service that gives you all the developer productivity of MongoDB, plus the added simplicity of a fully managed database service. You can get started for free with MongoDB Atlas at mongodb.com/atlas. That's mongodb.com/atlas. Today's Cloudcast is sponsored by Datadog, a modern, full-stack monitoring platform for cloud infrastructure, applications, and log metrics all in one place. Use Datadog's customizable dashboards to monitor, correlate, visualize, and alert on data from devices and cloud backends to have full visibility into performance. Datadog breaks down the silos within an organization's teams and removes blind spots that could cause potential downtime. With over 350 integrations, Datadog makes it easy for teams to collaborate together and monitor every layer of their stack within a single platform. So try Datadog for yourself with a free 14-day trial, and you'll receive a complimentary t-shirt. Just go to datadog.com/cloudcast. That's datadog.com/cloudcast.
And we're back. This week, we are going to be talking about SaaS. We've talked about SaaS a number of times on the show, and it's increasingly been a topic over the years, but we've got a new twist on it today. And in order to do that, we figured we'd go out and find somebody very, very knowledgeable in this space. You know, kind of the theme of this podcast at times is go find people smarter than us and experts in this space. And so today we have Jim Brennan, CPO at BetterCloud. How are you doing today, Jim?
I'm doing great, Aaron. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. So welcome to the show. Tell everyone a little bit about yourself and what has you so passionate about making SaaS better.
Sure. So as you mentioned, I serve as the Chief Product Officer for BetterCloud. A little background on me. I've been in the IT space for a little over 20 years. A lot of that focused on information security, but also a good portion of that focused on IT ops in particular and user compute. And so clearly SaaS has become a really big part of that latter category. And, you know, I think for me, the reason why I'm excited, it's the same reason why we as a company are excited. And that's just our core belief that SaaS is the way that companies will procure and deploy and manage software going forward. We firmly believe that's the way things are going to be done. And as we'll get into, there are some challenges that come with that. And so there's just a tremendous opportunity for all of us as an industry to make sure we can fully realize that potential.
Yep. Now, Jim, you know, we've also seen some growth in the SaaS market over the years on the podcast, like I mentioned earlier. But I will also say it also seems like a market isn't truly a market until you attach ops to the back of it, right? We've seen DevOps, SecOps, we've seen NoOps. Yeah. So today we're going to talk about SaaSOps. So tell us, what is SaaSOps?
Sure. Well, you know, as I mentioned, for all the goodness that SaaS brings, and there's a ton of goodness, there are, as with many things, there's a new set of challenges that comes with it. And primarily those challenges have to do with being able to manage and secure all these different SaaS applications that are very quickly being adopted by companies. It becomes a scale problem. You know, you think about what SaaS does, it gives you this best of breed capability, which is fantastic, but then you run the risk of having these disparate siloed applications. And how do you get your arms wrapped around that? How do you do kind of basic IT tasks like onboarding and offboarding users? How do you configure those applications? It becomes a scale challenge. And it's one that's pretty much exponential in the fact that it's not just the number of applications, it's also the number of users, which SaaS tends to not just be your employees, but also contractors and third parties of many different types, because again, that ease of procurement and management. And so we've seen these challenges become increasingly difficult for companies. And as a result of that, some new practices have emerged to help with those challenges. And it's only been recently that the name SaaSOps has gotten attached to it. But we see that actually brings a lot of comfort to people that are dealing with these challenges, because they tell us, they say, well, now there's a name for this thing that I've been wrestling with, SaaSOps. That's what I do. That's my job, right? And so we've seen job titles pop up. You know, people are changing their job titles to SaaSOps engineers, for example. We're seeing job postings. We're seeing discussions happening in various forums about SaaS operations or SaaS ops. And, you know, for us at BetterCloud, it's given a great name to what we do as well, because that's the business that we're in, helping manage and secure these great applications that are really starting to pick up in terms of adoption.
Yeah. And Jim, I'll relate it to, you know, kind of a personal journey, if you will. So I've done quite a few startups over the years. And I remember, you know, the first startup, if you will, is, you know, I'll go back even one step further. You know, my corporate days where there wasn't really anything SaaS, right? Everything was old client server, and you had your laptop with your apps on it. And then you started to, you know, one startup I had where everything was SaaS, right? But with that, there was no dashboard. There was no way to find things. It was like, you know, you were given a laptop with a bunch of bookmarks on it. And then it's evolved into like, oh, okay, now I've got like an Okta dashboard or something else like that, right? And so
sure.
For me, like at the core of SaaS ops is this ability to, okay, go, how do I go out and discover all of the capabilities that are being used across this company? And then how do I know which ones I have access to? There's no longer this central place for IT to go and discover things, right? There's no longer this fixed sure. perimeter of input and output. So how do you know if I'm exactly. If I'm the user, or even if I'm the administrator, the architect, how do you go discover and manage these things?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. And actually, you know, there's two sides of the coin, and you talked about both of them. You've got the end user side, which that's been the focus for the most part when it comes to the vendors creating SaaS applications. You know, a core principle, if you will, of SaaS is improving employee experience and end user productivity in ways that just weren't possible before. The flip side of that on the IT side were some of those challenges I mentioned and that you just mentioned about just even knowing what's running in the environment, you know? And so on the IT side, that discovery is a real challenge. And I will tell you, it's going to be increasingly a challenge over these next, I think, maybe 6-9 months, because there's so much rapid onboarding happening right now of SaaS applications, given the circumstances that we find ourselves in, that you know, employees are sitting at home and they want to be as productive as possible. And you know, they're connecting their Google account to whatever apps they need to do their job, for example. And at some point, the IT teams are going to have to get their arms wrapped around what does this new digital environment look like that has emerged, you know? So that problem of discovery has existed. I think it's actually heightened right now, or it's going to be heightened over the next several months. And there's a variety of ways you can do that. I mean, technically speaking, from an IT standpoint, given the right tools, you can do various things, everything from tapping into the APIs of some of the main platforms like Google or Office 365, that expose the third-party apps that identities are being federated into from their platforms. That's one way. Another way is being able to, hopefully in an automated fashion, go through expense management systems and see where the money is being spent. That's another good indicator. Tapping into your single sign-on providers, like you mentioned, but getting down to the level of what the login activity looks like. That's another great example to see how people are interacting with these applications. But you know, I will tell you, Aaron, this problem of discovery it's definitely emerged even before these recent times as sort of the first problem. You know, what people are telling us is that, yes, I have to be able to manage and secure these applications, but first I have to know what I even have, right? Yeah. You know, I can't manage and secure what I don't even know about. You know, so that problem of discovery is becoming really, really prominent.
Yep. And I'll kind of take it one step further in kind of that operations model is, okay, if we have data discovery as the, you know, I'll call it the day one problem, right? Then we have this concept, because there isn't a perimeter anymore, there's almost like, okay, there's no known exit point anymore for the data and the flows of all of this. So how do you know with all of these connections and through, especially with a lot more working from home and working remotely right now, how do we know if data left the company, for instance?
That's right. Yeah, it's a real problem. And you know, one of the things that makes it even more of a problem, getting back to that idea of end users being empowered, which is great. The reality is, if you look at all these different, let's say, file collaboration systems, that's probably the number one vector for data getting out. The way that those different applications allow their users to do things like sharing, for example. Those ways vary dramatically from one application to the next. You know, a shared link, the way a shared link behaves in Dropbox might be different from Google Drive, for example, might be different than OneDrive, SharePoint. And it's not uncommon for within a single company to use more than one of those types of applications. And so essentially, we've empowered our end users, and we've also now we're expecting them to somehow understand deeply all the implications of the choices they're making when it comes to how they share their data out. And we're kind of turning them into unintended insider threats, if you will, right? They're well-meaning, but maybe negligent, not through any faults of their own. There's no way they can keep up with how these things operate. So that problem exists for sure. And it's made worse by the proliferation of different sharing techniques, I would say. The only way you can centrally get a handle on that as an IT team is to use some type of what we call SaaS management platform. That, of course, is what BetterCloud is, but some type of platform that gives the IT team a way to essentially inspect via APIs of those platforms the various configurations of those files or folders or data types and get a sense of, okay, well, I've got 10,000 files shared out publicly, or I've got 50 groups, Google groups that are wide open, or I've got external domains that are part of my Slack channels. The only way you can get that visibility is by basically introspection of those apps, getting into the APIs that hopefully they expose, and most of them do at this point, and tapping into that visibility. The trick is being able to aggregate that visibility into a way where you as an IT person can, or as a SaaS ops engineer, I should say, can consume that information. And that's where a SaaS ops platform or a SaaS management platform comes into play.
And Jim, when we're talking about this too, I to take that even one step further, I think about it in two different vectors. One being, you know, prevention, if you will, of, hey, we need to have a certain level of policies in the way and compliance. And, you know, this is the way in which, you know, thou shalt handle the data, right?
Yep.
Versus the sometimes the path of least resistance, which is a little bit of like, hey, open everything up. And, you know, there's various reasons around the implications of that. But maybe there's, you know, five different ways you could, you know, get a file from one person to another person or from one SaaS application to another SaaS application. And then it's more along the lines of, oh, well, can you audit that? Can you correct it after the fact and maintaining compliance that way? So one is very, you know, heavy-handed, if you will, and one is more about, you know, finding the problems after the fact. And so is it one versus the other? Is it a combination of both? Tell us a little bit more about that operations.
It's a great observation. It's a spectrum is how we think about it, you know, because every company, every organization has to decide for themselves where they are, you know, what level of risk is acceptable to enable the business to operate the way that they deem appropriate. And, you know, you described correctly sort of the two extremes. You know, on one extreme, it's, you know, we are going to just be open. We're going to take full advantage of every possible, you know, collaborative / sharing type of capability of the SaaS applications in which we've invested. And we're going to just accept that risk. The other end is, no, we're going to lock everything down and just prioritize without a doubt the governance or security. And for most companies, for most organizations, the answer is in the middle, as you would expect. You know, I had one CISO tell me recently that, you know, he said, look, I didn't deploy Box across my entire enterprise so that I could then go turn off sharing and block sharing. That's the whole point, right?
I never thought of it that way. That's great. Yeah.
He said, why would I have done that? You know, so for most companies we deal with and that we see, it's somewhere in the middle. Now, from a vendor perspective, for somebody like us, we're a vendor that's in the business of offering those choices or those tools to a company. There is a bit of a philosophical choice to be made, right? Now, we believe at BetterCloud that our end goal is ultimately, as I mentioned at the beginning, we want to enable companies to realize the full potential of SaaS. And that does mean enabling their end users to get that full level of employee experience and productivity. we also do believe there's a way to do that without sacrificing governance and security. But philosophically, our approach is to essentially provide tools that quickly detect what you might call drift away from a agreed upon policy or configuration, and to automatically remediate that. And typically, as part of that automated remediation, there's some element of end user education, either an email sent to the user or a Slack message with, you know, links to an instruction about why this action was taken, why their choice maybe wasn't appropriate. We think that's the right answer. It's that quick detection, auto remediation with a strong component of end user education in the middle. That's our philosophy, you might say. We've gone to great lengths to make sure that our platform is architected in a way that does, though, allow our clients to make that choice for themselves. But we're not the type of solution, for example, that you put in line and you just block everything. That's just, we find that's typically, not only is it fraught with potential for errors, but it's just not in the best interest of the end user experience. So that's our view of it. And I will say too that the more time goes on, even in larger companies, we're starting to see a shift in terms of their own philosophies, more towards that end of the spectrum of, yeah, I want to empower my employees, but I want to do so in a way that doesn't introduce new liabilities to my business.
Yeah. Yeah. And it really ultimately goes back to, you know, every industry has growing pains, and SaaS being, you know, an up and comer, if you will, and you always have a little bit of wild, wild west, hey, let's just get things done. But then it leads into, okay, then the security people get involved and go, whoa, wait a second here. And then it becomes a little bit of trade-offs, if you will. And you know, they can get really heavy-handed in the trade-offs of security versus usability. But what is the most common first steps your customers are taking? Is it because of compliance, like GDPR or California privacy laws or some of those things? Is it data loss prevention? Like, what are the levers or reasons people, you know, pull and try and go down this SaaSOps path?
Yeah, it does vary a little bit. I mean, certainly, I would say in general, the number one thing is visibility. Most organizations, they come from a starting position, if you will, of I want to have better visibility into what's happening. Now, we talked a little bit about that in terms of just the discovery, but even beyond that, even with the applications they know that are in use because they perhaps rolled them out, there's a desire to get more visibility into configurations and how users are interacting with those applications, because they just don't have that from a centralized standpoint. That's that scale issue we talked about. It's very difficult across 10 or 20 or certainly 50, 100 applications. You know, it's not, I talked about that scale problem, but it's not uncommon for what you might consider a mid-market company to have upwards of 200 or 300 SaaS applications in use that they know about, right? So that's typically the first kind of issue that we see they're trying to get their arms around, other than that, you know, kind of what apps are even running in my environment, as I talked about. And that can be driven by a variety of things. Compliance, as you mentioned, is always in the mix. I would say it's more often driven by that desire for improved operational efficiency more than anything else. And then from there, it's a journey. You know, there's a SaaSOps maturity curve, if you will. It's how do you get that visibility? That's typically step number one. And there's subcomponents of that. And then you start working your way up that maturity curve in terms of how do you manage those applications. And that gets into things like configurations and user lifecycle management. And then a little further up, you start getting into security. So there is a maturity curve that is starting to become apparent to us as we work with many, many different companies. But I would say it's that visibility is typically the starting point.
Makes sense, Jim. And this is one of those, maybe this is just a culmination of all of the talking points we've had so far, but again, I'll use Okta as an example solely because last couple of companies, they've been the one I've used, so I have familiarity with them. And this this concept of, hey, I have an identity and this identity management, and I have a dashboard, and it has all of my SaaS apps. And, you know, as I get, permissions or, an icon gets added to my dashboard or it gets removed. And, you know, how is this space different or this approach different to me as an employee of the company? Is it just around, hey, like, you know, I know, for instance, y'all are partnered with Okta. This is right. just a partnership, and it's more about, insight into the operations behind the scenes, like Okta is the front end implementation. Like, tell me a little bit more about that.
Sure. Yeah. Well, identity is certainly part of SaaS ops, but when you look at the identity and access management space as it's developed, it's primarily focused on that initial authentication or getting that access to the apps. And as you mentioned, right, a key driver was making it more seamless for the end user to quickly get to those applications, to not have to remember different passwords and go through signing on to each of them every single time they want to use them. So it's really about that ease and simplicity of authentication, which is really important from an end user perspective. The SaaSOps components beyond that, though, are the ones that are geared primarily on the IT side of the house, dealing with all those challenges that we've been discussing. And that simply requires a much deeper level of integration with those SaaS applications and understanding of those SaaS applications, down to the level, even, Aaron, of what we refer to as the assets within those applications. So you can think of an asset within a SaaS application as everything from certainly a user, but also a file, a group, a board in Trello, for example, a channel in Slack. These are all the assets that exist within a given application. And for IT to do what they need to do in terms of that management and security, they need to get down to that level of visibility, that level of control. And that's just a level that goes beyond what identity and access solutions are built for. It's just not the purpose. That's not why they exist. So they play a very important role, especially on the end user side, but by themselves, they are not going to solve all of these management and security challenges that the IT teams are facing.
Yeah. And Jim, that's great insight. Thank you. Now we are almost out of time, but I have one additional question I want to ask you, and it's actually not related to any of this. Brian and I started this podcast a number of years ago, two guys in North Carolina, not in Silicon Valley, not in the bubble, if you will. And your background is non-Silicon Valley, and the company locations reflect that as well. How has it been building a company outside the Silicon Valley bubble?
Yeah, in a way, I think, Aaron, we've got kind of the best of both worlds, in the sense that you're right. Our primary locations are New York and Atlanta. In fact, all development is here in Atlanta. All product development, that's where I'm based. So I'm a fellow Southerner, not by birth, but by relocation. That affords some great benefits in terms of the talent pool that we can tap into. Frankly, we're not in as competitive of a market. And so there's great advantages to that. At the same time, because of the space we're in, a lot of our customers, especially our early customers, but even now, are Silicon Valley firms. Those are the ones that adopted SaaS first, right? So we've got a very strong connection to that, not only that geography, but that way of thinking. And it's just who we're interacting with a lot. And so we built the company and the platform with that influence very much present. And then also, many of our key investors in the company are Bay Area venture firms. And so we get a healthy level of input from them as well, as you would expect, right? Which is great. And so I do, as I mentioned, it's kind of the best of both worlds. We are, by the nature of what we do, we're living very much in that IT space, that area of the country, but also that area of the way people think about things. But yeah, we've got some great advantages by not being physically located there.
Yep. And Jim, thank you so much. We are at our time for today. How can everyone find out more about you, find out more about BetterCloud, and find out more about SaaSops in general as well.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I would encourage everybody to just come check us out at BetterCloud.com. We also have a great community that has developed over the years. Community is something very important to us. There's actually a Slack instance called Better IT. If you search for that, you will find it. It's open for anybody to join. And it's really a discussion around SaaSops more than anything else. So it's not even focused on BetterCloud. It's just a place for SaaSops professionals to collaborate and to learn more and to exchange information. And so that's another great resource for everybody to check out.
Awesome. On behalf of Brian, who wasn't able to make it this week, Jim, thank you very much for your time, and we'll talk to everyone next week.
Well, thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to The Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more shows, show notes, videos, and everything social media.